Hi, you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Justine Toe.
And I'm Simon Smart.
Well, Pastor Ray Minicon has roots in this country that go deeper than for many of us. He's a descendant of the Kabi Kabi Nation and the Gurangurang Nation of southeast Queensland, and also has connections to the people of Ambrim Island in Vanuatu. As an Aboriginal Christian leader, Ray has worked with World Vision, the Sydney Anglican Diocese, survivors of the Stolen Generation who were institutionalised in Kinchella Boys Home, and also other Aboriginal ministries. And you also pastor an Aboriginal church in Glebe. Is that right?
Yeah, you could say that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Now, Ray, white Australians might see Aboriginal Christians as having given in to, you know, the white fella's religion, if I can put it in those terms. But the seminar that you led at the Rethinking a Public Faith conference recently, in that seminar you said that Aboriginal spirituality actually has a lot in common with Christianity. So can you walk us through where you see those commonalities and what differences there might be? Just a couple.
For me anyways, in particular, in my study on what I'd call gospel and culture, how does the gospel fit into Aboriginal culture and spirituality? They're huge big questions that absorb not only my mind but a lot of other Aboriginal people. If we were to look at it from the point of view that for us, you know, the only terminology that Western people have come up with in terms of trying to describe what Aboriginal religion is, they came up with the notion of dreaming. And for me, if I took that dreaming concept, I'd say that dreaming is like what the Bible is to Christianity, or what the Quran is to Islam, or any of the other great books that have other, you know, of other faiths that guide their thinking and their philosophies and their social order, their laws, all of those kinds of things. That's what the dreaming is to me. Or if I were to put it in another, more of a theological concept, I would take John's gospel and put it into the philosophy of what John's talking about in the Logos. In the beginning was the Logos. And for us, in the beginning was the dreaming. And so it becomes then a much more of a deeper theological question of how you then interpret what the Logos is, or how you interpret what the dreaming is.
You also mentioned in the seminar that the Bible was written by a tribal people, and you see that that's also a connection to Aboriginal culture.
Well, that's how my elders taught me, my Aboriginal elders, and that's what they said. You know, I mean, the Bible is tribal. It comes from them tribal mob over there called the Jewish people, and everybody comes from a tribal background, regardless, including the Westerners, and they all come from a tribal background. So in terms of that particular notion, it helped us to look through the ways in which we, from our own particular perspective, can start to flesh out what we mean by the message of the gospel in terms of our own spirituality and our own culture. And I guess too, as one of those elders taught me, Jesus was a tribal man. He came from the tribe of Judah. So too was Paul. He came from the tribe of Benjamin. And so there's these tribal connections there as to how they looked at their own culture, their own spirituality. And it's interesting when you look at the Jewish nation in terms of their history and their culture, they have been able to maintain a deep connection with their spirituality, as well as their culture, as well as their land, whether they're living on it or not, in terms of the scriptures anyways, and maintain that tribal connection wherever they have been, you know, displaced to or dispersed to.
And that's very significant as well, given Aboriginal people's struggles, I suppose, to maintain that tribal connection, not only with the land, but also with Aboriginal spirituality.
Almost definitely, yeah, yes.
And Ray, tell us, first of all, how did you become a Christian? How did that transpire?
Yeah, good question. It's not one thing that you sort of desire as an Aboriginal person, But from my grandmother's time, I'd be what you would call a third generation follower of the teachings of Jesus. And my father was an itinerant evangelist. My grandmother, she was the first one. There was a bit of a, in the Bundaberg area anyways, if you look back on the history pages there, there was a lady missionary who came amongst the people up there, my ancestors up there, and she had a great impact in terms of the gospel message. And so my grandmother and a lot of other Aboriginal people were converted to Christianity or accepted the message. And so I come from that tradition there. My father being an itinerant evangelist as well as a pastor, he started churches all over the place. The only challenges that I've had in the past is I saw, you know, the ways in which my father, my mother and my father, and how the church treated them in the past. And it was always a very racist way of treating us, and I didn't want nothing to do with the church and with Christianity in my early days.
Yeah, so that presented a few challenges in terms of accepting the message your father had adopted. Eventually, you must have come around to thinking that the message itself or the story itself sort of transcended whatever, you know, badly implemented faith that you saw around you went ahead.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't really the message that's the problem. It's more the messenger and his methodologies that are the major issues there in terms of translating the message in a way in which it was much more empowering and not as superficial as we have, you know, recently discovered and many of the missionaries who came amongst us there weren't what I would call great scholars. They were either well-intentioned mechanics or those kinds of people who were trained in that particular you wouldn't call it a profession, but a skill anyways. And they're the ones who didn't have any, you know, major educational background to actually understand not only the message that they were delivering, but also the context in which they were delivering that message.
So there's been some failures, you might say, with the church when its relationship with Aboriginal people. Without trying to brush over those failures, have there been some good stories as well in the midst of that?
Oh, look, within our community, yes, there's a lot of good stories. I mean, if you look at the statistics across the country, the Aboriginal people as a group within the national population stats anyways, we have the highest number of adherents to the Christian religion in the country, about 72%. We're bigger than the Westerners.
Yeah, wow.
Or the invaders. So they are a lot more smaller and declining. And so our people have cottoned onto the message, and we have done our own exploration of what that message means. I shouldn't say we have done, but we are continually doing our own, if you call it, hermeneutics in terms of the ways in which we interpret that message in our own context. But today it's a lot more difficult. The major challenge isn't the institutionalized church only. One of our major challenges actually is media, because we can now have a whole range of different evangelists from around the planet telling us how to be good Christians, as well as other types of media, which interferes with, I guess, the process of doing our own theology and doing our own developments for our own understandings of what the message is all about.
Now, I know that you're also saying that there are a lot of Aboriginal Christians out there. So would it be right to say that there isn't this sense that to be a Christian means giving up your Aboriginal identity?
If you can take that particular track, but I don't think it's about giving up your identity. You'll always be an Aboriginal. It's just in your DNA. You can't sort of get away from that. And even if you do become a a Christian or a Muslim, a Buddhist, you're still an Aboriginal. You can't get away from your own tribal identity. So that's a misnomer for lots of us. The biggest challenge is, how does that message then translate itself into a way in which it becomes meaningful for your own personal as well as family as well as collective political challenges and social challenges?
Ray, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the work you've done with survivors of the Kinchella Boys' Home. We know that that place housed hundreds of boys between 1924 and 1970. They were members of the Stolen Generation. Terrible stories of punishment and sexual abuse there. What's your involvement now in working with people?
To me personally, it's been one of the most fulfilling parts of my life. For me, it's just been a wonderful opportunity to work with some of the most amazing people that I've ever met. There's an old Aboriginal guy who said that, you know, religion is for those who believe in hell. Spirituality is for those who've been there. These guys have been there. And that's what they call Kinchella Boys' Home. They walked through the gates of hell and they fought with the devil and they survived. And they're still fighting those demons that come from that particular abuse. And, you know, we in this country here don't have a very good record of how we look after children, whether it's past policies or even policies that exist today. So they have taught me more than I have, and I've gained more out of my experiences and my lessons with them than I have given to them. And I've helped them to develop their strategic plan and their, as well as their organisation. I've been privileged over the last number of years to be their CEO and help them to get on track with some funding coming through the door now and some other things there. We're still got a lot of lobbying to do, a lot of advocacy work to do, a lot of reconnecting with families and communities. There's just a lot of brokenness here that needs to be restored.
Have you seen some healing taking place in this environment?
Oh yes. I mean, that's the privilege of working with these men here, because the for them. When we first started out, it was about the catchphrase was taking control of our future. And for the first time in their lives, these men now, after the age of 50 upwards, are starting to take control of their own lives because they've never, ever had control of their lives since they were children. And that's a powerful thing.
Ray, you've talked about the need for reparation and for compensation and also for continued advocacy work. Just as a final question, what's the role of the church in trying to make amends for everything that's gone down over the last two centuries?
A number of things. One thing it can start doing and leading the way in this is really, one, is to pay the rent. They're on stolen lands. And if we're going to be following the truth of Jesus, that if he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, then we have to be truthful about our context and what we have done. Now, many of the churches have apologized. That's fine. But also from that apology must come some kind of concrete action that gives the Aboriginal people an opportunity to say, well, they're fair dinkum. But if they're not fair dinkum, then, you know, we don't want to participate in that kind of what I'd call shallow reconciliation, or very, 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 very thin reconciliation. When you look at what Jesus did on the cross, or what our Creator did on the cross, it cost him everything to reconcile the whole of the planet back to himself. And in this particular case here, with the church, with this incredible message, it hasn't as yet continued to look at the ways in which, not just its context, but what it has done to the Aboriginal people and to the land in this particular part of the planet here. So it's got to look seriously at itself, and we can continually tell it what to do, but only it can make up its own mind as to how it's going to respond to, really, the message of Jesus in terms of loving your neighbour and all the other things that go with love and grace and peace and joy. those things are just a part of the message of how we need to enact it into our communities.